Good morning. Today's Davening Ksuvos is Pei Aleph, wishing everyone a Ksiva Chsima Tova, good Gematria. We're starting today at the Mishnah. We're in the Mishnah on Pei Amud Beis, and we are in the 8th parak of the Masechta. A couple more dapim to go until we finish the 8th parak. The 8th parak concludes tomorrow, the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Anyway, but the topic has been here in the 8th parak regarding Nechsim Alug. So a woman goes into a marriage with properties. So if she's going into the marriage with properties, so as we already discussed now numerous times, the properties can either be earmarked as Nechsim Alug, or it could be earmarked as Nechsim Tzom Barzel. And just a quick recap, if it's earmarked as Nechsim Tzom Barzel, so that means that they're going to do an appraisal of the property at the time of the marriage. They're going to put the appraised value into the ksuva. The husband will take full ownership and full control of the property. But in the event of death or divorce, he's going to have to reimburse her with the in the event of him dying or him divorcing her. So he's going to have to reimburse her for the full amount of the appraised value of the ksuva at the time of the wedding. So that is if it's assessed as Nechsei Tzom Barzel. Effectively, if it's assessed as Nechsei Tzom Barzel, so it effectively becomes his. He basically has purchased for himself a property. He hasn't bought it yet. In other words, he hasn't paid for it yet. But that's an easy way to look at it. On the other hand, if she goes into a marriage, then the properties can be assigned as Nechsei Malug. Nechsei Malug properties are her properties. But as we've been discussing over the course of this parak, he's entitled to the payroll. So all the dividends of those properties are enjoyed by him, not just enjoyed by him, but owned by him. He owns the payroll on the property. Just in yesterday's daf, we went over exactly what that means, exactly how much are we describing him as being an owner of the property. An owner of the payroll, an owner of those dividends. We just discussed it yesterday. But meanwhile, that is what's called Nechsei Malug, and that's what we've been talking now for the last 3 or 4 days since the beginning of this parak. It's a short parak. I'm unclear at the time of marriage who is going to make these decisions of assignment in terms of what's Nechsei Malug versus what's Nechsei Tzom Barzel. Properties that she's more connected to, she'll keep as Nechsei Malug. But your question still, I'm bothered by the same question. I'm not sure. And then any properties that she gets while she's married, meaning she inherits property, she's gifted property, and now the marriage already took place, she's in a marriage. So that is, there's no question about it. At that point in time, those properties are Nechsei Malug. They do not become Nechsei Tzom Barzel. Nechsei Tzom Barzel only have the opportunity of becoming Nechsei Tzom Barzel only at the origination of the marriage when the ksuva is being written up. Any properties post ksuva are by definition going to be Nechsei Malug and not Nechsei Tzom Barzel. Good. This is what we've been discussing and describing now for some time. And can she sell Nechsei Malug? That was the first discussion we had in our parak, as to whether or not she can sell Nechsei Malug. The simple answer is she can't. We did, however, discuss and deliberate whether she can sell Nechsei Malug property during Erusin, where he hasn't yet become the rightful owner. He doesn't have a partnership in that property as of yet. So can she sell during Erusin? So you remember, you recall, that's where the first topic that we discussed here in the beginning of the 8th parak. But now we're well into the 8th parak, and we're starting today with the Mishnah. So what we're going to... She could. Okay, maybe. Huh? It could be.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Certainly possible. Okay, so what we're going to do today is as follows. So we are going to cover the majority of today's daf today. We're going to be doing Pei Aleph, but we're not going to get so far into Pei Aleph Amud Beis. We're going to get to Ha'u Gavra, which is about a quarter of the way down. The Ha'u Gavra discussion continues well into tomorrow's daf. So what we'll do is that we'll start that episode and that incident tomorrow. Okay. In the meantime, however, let's start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah over here is definitely confusing. It's a complex Mishnah. It's going to be detailing and describing what's going to happen to a Shomer Yavam in the event that she dies. So Shomer Yavam now is in a limbo position where her husband has died and there is a surviving brother, and the brother now has a zika to her. She's bound to her Yavam. Now, the Yavam can either do the mitzvah of Yibam or he could do the mitzvah of Chalitza. If he does the mitzvah of Yibam, so now he's basically taken on the role of his late brother in the event that they have a child, which is the goal of Yibam. So then the child is going to continue the legacy of the late brother. Good. That's in a very short nutshell, the mitzvah of Yibam. But what we're describing now and discussing is what is going to be the status of of all of her assets in the event that Rachmanis she dies has to shemar yavam. That's not the very first case in the Mishnah over here, but that's going to be the bulk of the Mishnah and its discussion. So the Mishnah starts off shemaris yavam shenafel anechasim. So let's say shemaris yavam has now properties coming into her while she's a shemaris yavam. So modim beishamay beisolo shemacheres v'nosenes v'kayim. So can she sell those properties? So we have agreement. Yes, she can sell those properties. Now, this is in contradistinction to what we learned in the beginning of the Perek. In the beginning of the Perek, so Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had a debate as to whether or not the Arusa can sell properties that she has acquired during Erusin. So that was a machlokus. But over here, when it comes to Shemaris Yavam, so her connection to her Yavam is is not as strong. It's less of a connection. And therefore, she has the right to go ahead and to sell any of those properties that she has acquired during her Shmira, during Shemaris Yavam. Now, that's the easy part. And here's where it gets complicated. So Mesa, so Maya, so Biksuva, so Uvenechasim, Nechasim, Yotzi, Mema. So now, in the event that Rachmanis, so the Shemaris Yavam herself dies, while she was with Shemaris Yavam. And now, so she had now Nechasim. She had properties, so who's going to now be the inheritor of her properties? So she has two people that stand to inherit her. Okay, now that sounds a little bit strange, but if you think about it, it does make sense. Two people standing to inherit her because she is not a married woman. Had she been a married woman, so who is going to inherit her? There's only one person who is inheriting a married woman in the event that she dies, and that's going to be her husband. A husband, a Baal's Yorish Yisishto. That's the baseline halacha. Over here, she doesn't have a husband. She had a husband, Rachmanis, the husband predeceased her. Now, it's also true that she has a Yavam. And the Yavam's going to stand in for her husband, but he hasn't stood in yet. In other words, he hasn't taken on that role yet. So does she have a husband? The answer right now is no, but she kind of does. In other words, she's in between husbands, if that's not confusing enough. And on top of that also, well, she also has her family. In other words, in the event that she doesn't have a husband, so then who's going to be Yorisher? So her family's going to be Yorisher. She obviously doesn't have children. Had she had children, she wouldn't have been a Yavam. So, but she has a father, and if she doesn't have a father, there's a next of kin in the family. In other words, someone in her father's family is, if not her father, then somebody else is related to her, standing to inherit her. So how many Yorshim does she have? She has two sets of Yorshim, two teams of Yorshim, if you will. And so now, simple question. It's not a simple question. I'm being unbelievably sarcastic, but now basically asset allocation. How are assets going to be divided? And, right, not interested in being that illiterate, or not illiterate, but with the alliteration, but the Chachamim are divided on how our estate is to be divided. Okay, it's a machlokus. It's a machlokus amongst the Tanaim exactly how to divide our estate. So, I'm going back. Mesa, Mayasa Biksuvasa. So, what do we do with the Ksuva? So, now when we say the word Ksuva over here, now I'm not interested in getting overly complex over here in this Mishnah, but part of the complexity of the Mishnah over here is that the Mishnah is using terminology that's a little bit ambiguous and a little bit vague and could be understood in multiple ways. The method I'm going to be presenting this Mishnah today is all according to Rashi, with the understanding that there are other ways in which how to present this Mishnah. Okay. One second. Sorry, just a little technical repair. Okay. So, Mesa. Maya said, Ksuva says, so what are we going to do with the Ksuva? So the Mishnah over here uses the word Ksuva. So the Mishnah is talking about the base amount, right? The base amount that's owed to her by her late husband. And but again, it's right now in abeyance because there is a Yavam. But still, in other words, there's a base amount to the Ksuva. And on top of that, there's also another figure that's written into the Ksuva itself, and that's the Nechset Zon Barzel. In other words, the Nechset Zon Barzel, which we described in the beginning of Shir today, so that's going to be properties that she brought into her original marriage, where it was appraised, and that amount was written to the Ksuva as well. So over here, as far as the Ksuva is concerned, so, Nechasim, Uv Nechasim, Nechasim, Ve'yotzim Imam, and regarding the Nechset Zon Barzel, right, let's do that again, let's do that better. Nechasim, Nechasim, Ve'yotzim Imam, is a reference to Nichse Malug. So, what do we do with the Ksuva? the Nichsei Tzimon Barzel and the Nichsei Malug. Now, at this point in time, what the Mishnah is really looking to clarify is specifically regarding the Nichsei Malug, meaning I know that the Mishnah just lined us up for Ksuva and Nichsei Tzimon Barzel and the and Nichsei Malug, but right now the Gemara is just litigating the Nichsei Malug. So Beit Shammai Amrim Yachloku Yoshe Abalim Yoshe Av. So according to Beit Shammai, that's going to be divided between the two sets of Yoshim. Beit Sila Amrim Nechas Meches Kasam. So Beit Sila says, here's what's going to happen. And what we'll do is that we'll take each category and treat each category independently. As far as the Nechasim are concerned, now Nechasim over here is a reference to Nichsei Tzimon Barzel. Now Nechasim being a reference to Nichsei Tzimon Barzel is confusing, because we just used the words Nechasim previously to describe Nichsei Malug. So like I said, the Mishnah is a little bit confusing, and I'm just presenting it like Rashi. So as far as the Nechasim are concerned, specifically Nichsei Tzimon Barzel, Bechez Kasam. So that's going to remain in their Chazaka. Now in their Chazaka, what is that a reference to? Meaning who right now is a holder of the Nichsei Tzimon Barzel. So the Nichsei Tzimon Barzel can get complicated. Because again, what happened was is that she brought into the marriage, and they did an appraisal, and that appraised value went into the ksuva, and who's holding it right now? So who's currently holding it? Okay, so that part is tricky, and what the Mishnah means over here when it says that nechaskin becheskasan, so it's not abundantly clear what the Mishnah means by that. Uksuva. Now, as far as the ksuva is concerned, now when we say ksuva, we're talking about the ikr ksuva of the 200 zuz. So becheskas yoshi abal. So that's going to go to the Yoshe Abal, whoever stands to inherit the husband. Over here, who's standing to inherit the husband? Her brother-in-law. Now, as far as the Nechsei Malug is concerned, so that's the Yoshe Ha'av. That's going to go to the father. Okay, so meaning her father. Okay, so what we've done now is that we basically took on all of her assets, according to Beis Hillel, divide into three categories, Nichsei Tzimon Barzel, the base amount of the Ksuva, and the Nichsei Malug. What we can say clearly is that as far as the base amount of the Ksuva, that's going to go to her, to the brother-in-law, meaning the Yavam. As far as the Nichsei Malug is concerned, that's going to go to her family, right? Because again, Nichsei Malug is hers, and Rachmanis, she was Nifter, so it's going to go to her family, it's going to go to her father. And then as far as the Nichsei Tzimon Barzel is concerned, unclear. All we know is that the Mishnah uses the words Bechez Kasam. And a lengthy discussion, a debate exactly amongst the Rishonim, exactly how that's how to be divided. Okay, regardless. Okay. Like I said, it's a complicated Mishnah in terms of what to do with her assets, being that now she's in this limbo state. She's basically got Yorshim pulling her on her from two sides. Okay. So, and what's going to happen to her estate? It'll get divided amongst different family members. Now, let's say the brother died and left cash. So what do you do with the cash? So you look at mem karkav ahuocha peros. So what you're going to do with the cash, like we described in the beginning of this perek, is that you want to take this cash and you want to turn it into something that produces. So you buy property with it, and the yavam is going to enjoy the peros. So the peros at tlushim in a karka. Now, what if it is peros that were detached? So yelakech mem karka veochal peros. So if at the time of the death of her husband, so there was peros, but it was detached. So peros that were detached are going to be viewed as a cash asset. And like we discussed earlier in the perek, so something which is a cash asset. So what you want to do is you want to create it into a producing vehicle. So you take it and you buy property, whatever property you could buy with it. And that way it's going to be producing it'll be producing, and that's what you want to do with it. Now, a mechubar bekarka. Now, if it's connected to the ground, so how do you treat that? So I'm a Rebbe Meir, shamanosam kamein yafim be peros v'kamehain yafim below peros. So what you're going to do is basically you're going to have to find its value. So how do you find its value? Meaning when you have peros that are connected to the ground. So basically what you're going to do is you'll do two appraisals. We did this earlier in the perek as well. You'll do two appraisals. You do an appraisal with the yield connected to the ground. You'll do the appraisal with the yield disconnected, otherwise known as you harvested, and you appraise the property, whatever the difference is, meaning you assume that the property with the yield connected to the ground is going to be more. Whatever that difference is going to be the value of that, of the produce. and Vamoser, and what do you do with that value? Lakech Mem Karka Vahu Ochel Peros. So what you're going to do with that is now you're going to purchase land with that value, and again, it's going to produce. V'chacham Amor, and Peros Mechubar Mekarka Shalo. So, and the Chachamim disagree with Rav Meir. Fruit that are connected to the ground, they belong to him. The and Tlushim in the Karka, and fruit that are detached from the ground, Kol HaKori Zachabahem. Sorry, Kol HaKodem Zachabahem. Whoever gets there first is going to be Zocha. So, Im Kadam Hu Zacha. If the husband was got there first, so he's going to be Zocha. Kad Mehi, if she got there first. So now, Yilakech Mehem Karka, V'ochal Peros. So what you're going to do is that, once again, now that she got it, so now it's hers, but hers vis-a-vis Nechse Malug. And what you'll do is that you'll just simply buy property with that with that money, and it'll turn into a producing vehicle. Because again, in other words, that's what you want to do with Nechse Malug, turn into a producing vehicle. The Karen, the principal, belongs to her, and the Paris belong to him. Okay, Kansa. Okay, so all that, everything we just said, the last 10 minutes, have been all discussion regarding the assets of a Shomer Yavam. So that in the event that the Shomer Yavam dies, so what happens now to her assets? So it's going to be divided. How is it going to be divided? You have two competing Yershim of her assets. And so, machloks between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in terms of how exactly to divide her assets, how to divide her, Nechsei Tzom Barzel, her, Nechsei Malug, and her Ksuva as well. Now, Kansa. Now we move on in the Mishnah, and now we discuss what happens when they get married. So when they get married, So when they get married, harei kiish l'chol davar. So once they get married, so ishto. In other words, yavam and yavama now are husband and wife. And bilvad should take suvasal nechzei bala rishon. With one notable difference. And that is that the ksuva is going to be on bala rishon. So this is an idea which we expressed numerous times back in Yavamos, and we're saying it now here again in ksuvas as well. And that is that what's securing the ksuva? So despite the fact that the Yava married her, but he doesn't have to put up any money in order to secure the ksuva. In fact, you don't even have to write a new ksuva. The ksuva that she had from her previous husband, so now her brother-in-law, now husband, is going to be using that very same ksuva. The assets that he inherits from his brother, I don't know if I made this point clear, but let's make it clear right now. And that is that all the assets of the late brother are going to be inherited by the Yavam when he does the mitzvah of Yibum. In other words, in the mitzvah of Yibum, so two things are happening. Number one, he gets a new wife. Number two is that he's inheriting all the assets of his late brother, right? Normally what happens is that when somebody dies, there's a distribution of assets amongst all the, all those who stand to inherit. However, when it comes to the mitzvah of Yibum, all the assets of the late brother are going to be inherited by the Yavam. So the Mishnah is just simply telling us over here that since he's inheriting all those assets, and since those assets are there to already secure her ksuva, so basically all he's going to do is that he's going to use those assets against the ksuva obligation. Meaning, those assets are already mortgaged, leaned against her ksuva obligation. Lo yomer la harei ksuva sech munachas ala shochan ela konachas avachrein l'ksuva sa. And what he should not do is he should not earmark a particular parcel of land or a particular item of value and say, look, that's going to be for your ksuva. But rather, what he should do is he should let all of his brother's assets serve as a security against the ksuva. In other words, don't take the lien off of any of his brother's assets, but keep them all there. V'chein, similarly, says the Mishnah, lo yomar adam li'ishto, harei ksuva sech menechas ala shochan, ela kol nechas avachrein l'ksuva sa. So, and don't do the same thing in a general marriage. Meaning, forget Yibum, and forget when you inherit your brother's assets. Meaning, in a general marriage. So what do you have? So you have a wife, and she has a ksuva. Now, what is securing that ksuva? All your assets right now. I say assets, really, we're talking about properties. But all your properties right now are securing the ksuva. So how about this? How about just simply say to her, look, write I want to free and clear some of my properties right now. But Baruch Hashem, I got plenty of properties and more than enough to cover your ksuva. How about this? Let's just turn to one of my properties right now, and let's just use that against the ksuva, and that way we'll free up all the other properties. You good with that? So the Mishnah says, don't do that. Now, is the Mishnah saying you can't do that, or is the Mishnah saying you shouldn't do that? Stay tuned. We're gonna litigate that very question in the Gemara. Girsha. Okay, so where are we now down in life cycles? So we now talked about the Shomer Yavam as a Shomeres Yavam, whether or not she could sell properties, what happens if the Shomeres Yavam dies in the state of being a Shomeres Yavam. Then we talked on the next life cycle, which is what happens when the Shomeres Yavam marries a Yavam. So what happens then? And now we're at the life cycle of what happens when, after she marries a Yavam, then they get a divorce. So Girsha, Ein La El Ksuva. So at that point in time, the only thing that they have is a Ksuva. Harehi Kechol HaNashim. So she is like going to be like sorry, Ein La El Ksuva. Hechzira Harehi Kechol HaNashim. So so the only thing they're going to have, I'm sorry, they'll be she'll be like any other wife. So Ein La El Ksuva Bavad. The only notable difference is going to be Ksuva. In other words, the Ksuva is still going to be secured by her original late husband. Okay, we'll discuss more of this in detail a little bit later on. Okay, so where do we stand right now? The Shomeres Yavam financially is a mess. Okay, that's a nice, neat way to sum up a difficult Mishnah over here. And that financially she has basically, because she's in the state of limbo where she is in between husbands right now, but she is connected to her upcoming husband. Again, she's not married to that man, but she has Zika to that man. And because also she has her family. So basically she has, in terms of her purse strings, she has two people pulling at it. And in the event that she dies, so this is really reflected in terms of who's inheriting and who's inheriting what. Okay, we had a machlokas in the Mishnah between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, but basically in terms of Yorshim, so we basically have two teams of people who are going to be Yorisher. Her brother-in-law and her father. And again, I say her father, I mean team father. In other words, if her father's not alive, but someone on that side is going to be standing to inherit her. Okay, good. So that's what we learned back in the Mishnah. And as a result of that, so what happens now in the event that she dies? So some of the assets go to her brother-in-law. Some of them go to her father. Okay, and some of it may end up being divided. Good. So that's what we learned together in the Mishnah. Okay, so now the Gemara starts off with a really simple question, and that is that Rachmanis. Let's say now the Shomeres Yavam dies. Who's bearing her? And when I say who's bearing her, meaning who's footing the bill? Whose financial responsibility is it to bury her? Let's remind each other what we learned already earlier in the Masechta, and that is that had she had a husband, so the husband now is obligated to bury her, right? That's the kvura. So the kvura responsibility is on the husband, so that when she dies as a married woman, and so now her late husband, not her late husband, sorry, her surviving husband, okay, that's better. So her surviving husband now has the financial obligation to bury her. That we knew already. So now we're talking now about the Shomeres Yavam. So now you can imagine now it's confusing because who's inheriting her? You have two different parties inheriting her. So who's going to have the financial responsibility to bury her? That's a fantastic question.
Isn't it related to Masiyah though? Whoever is getting her
Masiyah? Yeah, right. Not exactly. Right. Let's go back. So the Masiyah dime is connected. The Masiyah dime is connected the Mizonos, and the. And the Peiros is connected the Pirkuna. And as far as Kfur is concerned, this takes us back to Mem Zayim. That's a long time ago. So over a month ago. And the Kfur is connected Ksuva, meaning the Nidunya. The fact that her father put in a dowry, so in exchange for that, he has the obligation to be kover her. Okay, so fine. And the dowry usually is described as Nechzitzon Barzo. Okay. Anyway, just...
So is the...
Yavam
have a claim on the dowry at this point?
So let's see the Gemara. So Yavam Mikovra, so who's responsible to bury her? Yorshe Abal Kavrela de Kayarsik Suva. On one hand, the Yorshe Abal are going to be required to bury her because the Yorshe Abal are going to be getting the Ksuva. Odilma Yorshe Av Kavrela de Kayarsin Echasim Nechnasim Vayorsim Yimal. On the other hand, her family is going to be retaining the Nechzei Malug properties. So maybe in lieu of that, they should be the ones who are financially responsible to bury her. Amrav Amram Tashma, Detanya Shemeres Yavam Shemesa. So the Gemara says, okay, look, I have a Braisa. And the Braisa tells us, Yor Sheha, Yor Sheik Suvasa, Achayavim Bekvurasa. So her, Yor Sheha, but again, because she's a Shemeres Yavam, that's not enough information. Meaning just to say Yorsha, those who inherit her, Remember, there are two competing parties who inherit her. So, Yorshe Ksuva Sa, meaning whoever's getting the Ksuva. And that, of course, is the Yorshe HaBaal, those who are the Yorshe of the Baal. So they're the ones who are obligated to bury her. And not Yorshe Ha'av. So the Gemara says, Amar Abai Afanami Tanin Abai says, good, I learned the same thing in the Brice as well. Amon and Izonis, me, Nirse Yisomim, my said Deshlahem, Vehin, Chayav Mikvurasa. Yorshe Ksuvasa, Chayav Mikvurasa. So in the Brice over here, we're discussing a related issue, which is a widow. So a widow who's right now currently being supported by the estate. So when the estate supports her, and Rachmanis now the widow dies, so who is financially obligated to bury her? So the Braisa says, Yorshe Ksuva Sa, who's ever standing to inherit the Ksuva, so they are obligated to bury her. So same thing is true now regarding our Mishnah as well. The Ezo Amanis Yesh Lashnei Yorshin, Haviomer Zeh Shemeres Yavam. Now in the Braisa, we're talking about a widow. Who was the Shemeres Yavam? Who told us that? How did you see that in the Braisa? So the wording of the Braisa. Again, go back to the Braisa. I'm just rereading the last couple lines. Ein chayavim bikvurasa, yorsheha, yorshek suvasa. Right, you see that extra language over there? Yorsheha, yorshek suvasa? Meaning, when do we ever need to clarify yorsheha? And by the way, who are we talking about? Oh, that's yorshek suvasa. Meaning, by the extra language, it's clear over there that the Braisa is describing a Shemeres Yavam. Had it been describing any other woman, there would be no ambiguity in terms of who's going to be Yerusher. We know who's going to be Yerusher, a regular woman. Only when it comes to the Shemeres Yavam, the ambiguity lies in the fact that there are multiple people going to inherit her. So over here, the Braisa is talking about a Shemeres Yavam. So I'm a Rav Aleima, so good. So what do we have right now? So we now have a question and answer. So the question was, is that when you have a Shemeres Yavam who dies, so who's going to have the responsibility of burying her? So the Gemara's answer decisively is Yorshe Ksuvasa Chayim B'Kvurasa, which means that the Yorshe Abal, those who stand to inherit her husband, meaning her brother-in-law, the Avam. So he has the financial obligation to go ahead and bury her. So Amar Rava, so Rava says, okay, I'd like to think this out. I'd like to ask questions. Let's go. So why can't the Yavam say as follows? Look, I'm going to inherit my brother, but Ishto ain't any cover. But I'm not burying his wife. Meaning, had it been my wife, okay, we have what to talk about. But it's not my wife. In other words, it was my brother's wife. So I don't have the financial obligation to bury her. So I'm le abaye mishum de bayin alav mishet sadin im achiv yareish yikvors Ishto. Im eino koveres ishto, so you think suvasa. So basically, the counter argument to you, Abai, would basically be the following. Look, I'll give you your options. You want options? I'll give you options. So if you're inheriting your brother's estate, so then you're going to be inheriting also his obligation to go ahead and to bury his wife. And if you're not going to bury her, okay, so in other words, she was entitled to a ksuva, so now you're going to pay her a ksuva. Now that's a little bit strange, by the way, because normally, right, good. So that's a little bit strange because normally, when do you pay a woman a ksuva? When he predeceases her. So then you're going to be paying her a ksuva. And now over here, the argument is that we're saying to the Yavam, that you have to go ahead and you have to bury her, because if you don't bury her, so then you're going to have to pay out the ksuva. But
if he died with children, she would have collected her ksuva at that point.
Okay, fine. So what does it mean you're going to be paying the ksuva? So Amalei Hachi Kamina. So Rava says back to Abaye, let me be clear about my position. And that is Achani Yorish, and Isishto, and Anikover. Look, in other words, I'm going to reset my question, and my question goes like this. Here's where the Yavam could be arguing, and that is, I'm going to be inheriting my brother, good, but what I'm not going to be doing is I'm not going to be burying his wife. I'm not going to take the financial responsibility. And now, what are you arguing over here? So as far as the Ksuva is concerned, so Ksuva is not collected while she's alive, and over here, in order for me to pay out a Ksuva, so whose Ksuva am I paying? It's not really my ksuva that I'm paying. So it is my late husband's ksuva that he was that I'm paying. And from his perspective, meaning as he approached the end of his life, was his wife ever dead? No. In other words, so that would be paying out a ksuva mechayim while his wife was alive. Well, who does that? Oh, nobody does that. So in other words, the Rav is resetting his argument on behalf of the Yavam. Look, I'll inherit my brother, but I'm not going to be, I'm not financially responsible to bury his wife. And as far as the ksuva is concerned, there's no ksuva obligation. The ksuva obligation that I have is only but an extension of my late brother. And from his perspective, he never had an obligation to pay the ksuva. So man shamas le diyislay mizrash ksuva beishamai. Vishamin le beishamai da'amrei shtar omi legabas kegavoy dami. So the Gemara says, well, first of all, this idea that you don't have to pay the ksuva, so that's a Beis Shammai Shita. Now, when we say a Beis Shammai Shita, what does that mean? It means that when we look at the ksuva and read the ksuva, so are we going to be darshaning the ksuva? Now, normally what you do is you darshan psukim in the Torah, right? Psukim and Navi, we darshan as well. You darshan the ksuva, I mean, you go over every letter and every word of the ksuva, and you expound it, and you take it literally, and you extract halachas from it. So this has been a discussion that we've had a couple of times. Here in Ksuvas, we've had it. Back in Yavamas, we've had it as well. And so the Gemara says, so this idea that because from my brother's perspective, his wife never was never dead in his lifetime, and therefore he doesn't have to pay Ksuva, so that is something that is born out of the language of the Ksuva. So and who does that? Beis Shammai does that. Good. And I got news for you. So Vishamin Lahula Beis Shammai Damri Shtarho Milagabas Kegavoy Dami. I also happen to be of the position that according to Beis Shammai, any note that stands to be collected is viewed as if it's already collected. So this is Shah Omid Lagavas Kegavu Idami. So the...
What you're saying again, any note that's viewed...
Any note that stands to be collected, so the halacha views it as if it's already been collected. So since the note now, the note over here we're discussing is Ruksuva, that is an IOU. So since it stands to be collected, halacha views it as if it's already collected. Okay.
So you have to do a proof
on it. Out of the discussion that we're having right now. In other words, let's just stay focused on this discussion over here. We are litigating but only one issue, and that is who's financially obligated to bury her. And right now what Rav is asking on behalf of the Yavam is that the Yavam could just simply say, look, I'm going to inherit my brother, but I'm not financially responsible to bury her. And what the counter argument right now to that is that, well, okay, you don't want to bury her, fine. So then just pay out the ksuva. In other words, one or the other. And what we're trying to figure out is whether or not that is actually a legitimate argument. And to that, the Gemara says, well, Beit Shammai reads the ksuva literally, but Beit Shammai is also of the position that any outstanding note is viewed as if it's already collected. Now, how do I know this? I know this based on the Mishnah. We did this Mishnah together, did not? So let's say we have the following, and that is that we're talking here about a sota. So the sota went ahead and secluded herself with a man that she was warned not to, and we don't know what happened in that room. And now what happens is that she's being taken to the base of Mikdash in order to drink the May sota. Now, if we know what happened in that room, meaning if she in fact committed adultery, and witnesses saw the act of adultery, so that's it. In other words, game over. She is now a sota, but not a sota suffik, but a sota vadai. And at that point in time, she has forfeited her ksuva. Husband's still going to have to give her a get, but she forfeited her ksuva. Okay, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about where we don't know what happened in that room, meaning we have a good reason to suspect what happened in that room, but we don't know what happened in that room. And under those circumstances, she's brought to the base of Mikdash to drink from the mesota. And mesa ba'alei ma'shalosh shasu. Now, what happens if the husband dies before? She drinks from the water. So Beit Shammai Amrim no los ksuvasa v'lo shosos. Beit Hillel Amrim o shosos o lo no los ksuvasa. So according to Beit Shammai, what she gets to do, she gets to collect her ksuva. And she doesn't drink the water. And Beit Hillel is of the position that, well, either she'll drink the water or she'll collect the ksuva. And that shita Beit Hillel, it's a confusing shita. O shosos. So what do you mean she has an option to drink? Right? In other words, her husband's dead. She doesn't have an option to drink. So the beginning of Parshas Noso, not the beginning, but in Parshas Noso. So the Torah says that the husband's going to bring her to the Kohen. So Amarechman of Aleka. So if there is no husband, so you don't have the procedure of her drinking, meaning drinking is simply no longer an option once their husband's dead. Okay, so all we're doing right now is just we are redacting, refining our understanding of the Shita of Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says, look, drinking is now no longer an option. Okay, drinking is no longer an option. Okay, you forfeited your ksuva. Okay, that's the Shita of Beis Hillel. We're right now focusing on Beis Shammai. So Beis Shammai omrim no lo ksuva v'lo shosos. So, and Beis Shammai is of the position that she gets to collect her ksuva. And now let's ask the obvious question. What? What? She collects her ksuva? In other words, right now, she's acting in an extraordinarily inappropriate manner to the point where now we're taking it to the Beis HaMikdash in order to drink from the Beis Sota. And the husband died, so now we have a technical issue, which is that she can't drink the water. Okay. But she's going to be collecting her ksuva? And that's the Gemara's question. So so according to Beis Shammai, no lo suva v'lo shosos v'amai. So sveikahu, suffik zanai, suffik lo zanai. So kasik sefa, suffik amotzi mide vadai. So the Gemara says, okay, so now I don't know what happened there in that room. That's called a suffik, and now what? And now we don't know what happened over there. Now he's a vadai, meaning when we say he's a vadai, what does that mean? It means the husband's definitely holding his money. He's a mukhzak. And now he has to go ahead and pay her the ksuva. And again, he's no longer alive. So we're talking about the estate. But it doesn't matter. It's all still the same point. And that is that I know I'm going to pay obligations if I'm absolutely obligated to pay. But if I may not have to pay, so then the money's not coming out of my hand and going to somebody else on the chance that maybe she's entitled and deserving of the ksuva. Meaning, obviously, I'm taking all the emotion out of it right now. In other words, is she entitled to the ksuva, yes or no? Suffolk, we don't know. We don't know what happened in that room. If she, in fact, committed adultery, that's a forfeiture of the ksuva. If she didn't commit adultery, she didn't forfeit her ksuva. We don't know. And again, we have a lot of suspicion to believe what happened in that room, but we don't know. So now, he's going to have to pay her ksuva, right? He, meaning the estate, is going to have to pay her ksuva. We have a chazakah that they're holding the money. I'm motzi mechaver, all of her ayah. Anyone who wants to extract some money from somebody else has a burden of proof. She has a burden of proof, and right now she's in a really bad position. She may have committed adultery. Again, chances are she did, but we don't know. And now, if she did, she forfeited her ksuva. No way she's entitled to receive the ksuva. How did you understand the Shita Beis Shammai? So the Gemara says, "Oh, so I'll tell you how you understand Shita Beis Shammai. Kasari Beis Shammai shtar homi legavus kegavoi dami." By virtue of the fact that she's holding the note, so do you know how halacha views her as somebody who already collected the note, right? In other words, the holder of the note is the collector of the note. Halacha views it as if she has already collected the note. So now, according to Beis Shammai, let's reset the question, and it's going to be a different answer. Who's the muchzuk of the money?
She is.
Oh, she right. She's a holder of the note. The holder of the note, according to Beis Shammai, is the muchzuk of the money, and so therefore, how come she's entitled to the ksuva? Easy. Well, I mean, easy now that you inserted this principle over here, which admittedly is such a chiddush, but easy now. In other words, because she's an old holder, she's now considered also the money holder. She's holding the bag halachically, and therefore she's entitled to the money because she is a mukhzik on that money. Okay, so v'ha be'inan kishitinas la'achir titli mashikas v'laichi v'leika. So the So where are we right now? So we are now in a position where we're trying to understand in terms of the argument that is being provided by the Yavam, meaning we leave the world of Sotz, we go back to the world of Yavam. So in the world of Yavam, who has the obligation to bury the Yavam? The Shemeres Yavam who died, so who has the obligation to bury her? So her brother-in-law has the obligation to bury her. The Yorshe Habal, which is her brother-in-law, right? Which could potentially be her husband, but Rechmanis, she died before they got married. Now, that we've established, and what we've been trying to do, and it's really the only issue that we've been exploring the whole day, is Rava's question, which is, why don't you just simply counter and argue, and say, look, I'm going to be inheriting my brother, check, but I'm not taking the financial responsibility to bury her. Meaning, what do I have to do with that? Why do I have to bury her? And assume the financial cost of having to bury her. Meaning, she wasn't my wife, she was my brother's wife. So why do I have to do it? And so now the response is that, look, I'll give you your options. Your options are either you bury her, or alternatively, you pay the ksuva. And now we're trying to understand. Well, what does that mean? In other words, pay the ksuva. In other words, right? In other words, I didn't predecease her. In other words, she predeceased me. And if you're asking me to pay the ksuva that my brother has to pay her, I don't understand. In other words, when she was alive at. In other words, sorry, right from the perspective of burial, she was at the she was alive at the time. Like, who pays a ksuva to someone who's alive? Good. So the Gemara's counter argument to that is that no, that argument only stands according to Beit Shammai, and Beit Shammai is of the position that any note is viewed as if it's already collected. So in other words, she's a note holder of the ksuva. Therefore, it's as if collection already took place. If it's viewed as if a collection already took place, so therefore she should be entitled to the ksuva payment. Okay. I admit all that was really complicated. All right. In other words, there's a lot of moving parts to this discussion. It's extremely complicated discussion. Okay. That's where we stand right now. So So the Gemara says, okay, look, we are sitting on every word of the ksuva. In other words, in order for him to pay the ksuva, so you have to be compliant with the wording of the ksuva. Okay, so what we're doing now is we're reading a line of the ksuva. Here's how it reads. Kishi tinasi la'achir, when you marry somebody else, so titli mashikas of laichi, so you're able to collect the ksuva. Meaning until that point in time, you'll be supported by the estate, but when you finally remarry, so then you're going to receive your ksuva. So v'leika, and the Gemara notes over here, obviously didn't happen. In other words, that's a shomer siavim, she died. So in other words, okay, so now she's entitled to the ksuva, right? No, she's not. In other words, in order for entitlement to the ksuva, she has to get remarried. Obviously, that didn't happen, and it won't happen. So Amar Ravashi, Yavam na mikacher dami. So the Gemara says, no, it did happen. How did it happen? In the form of the Yavam. In other words, again, the Yavam is viewed as a stand-in. And so despite the fact that her husband died, but the fact that now the Yavam, even though they didn't get married, it's enough of a stand-in, it's enough of a pseudo-husband in order to qualify and conform to the language of the ksuva. Okay, so basically, either bury her or pay the ksuva, one or the other. Okay. In other words, to her family. Huh? Okay, fine, her family. Yeah. Okay. Shalach le Rav Abaye b'yad Rav Shmaya bar Zera. Okay, so the more correspondence between Rav and Abaye. It's funny, usually they talk directly to one another. Okay, why they're sending correspondence to each other, I don't know. We're told who exactly is the courier. Anyway, Mina Naksuva Lagabas Mechaim V'atanya. Now this idea that ksuva could be collected even while alive. So we learned in the Braisa, Rabbi Abba Omer, Shalti Simchus. I wrote to Shim Korb Nichse Achiv, Keitzadu Ose. So, somebody wants to sell Nichse Achiv. Okay. What happened was is that the brother died. And now, what do we say? That two things are happening. Number one, aside from he has a mitzvah of Yibum to do. But financially speaking, what's happening right now is that he, the Yavam, is going to be inheriting all of his brother's assets. We also know, because we already went over it this morning, is that all those assets are also going to be used to secure the ksuva. So now, if those assets are locked and leaned against their ksuva, even though they far exceed the value of the ksuva, but still, they're all going to be secured. So, what the Bryce over here deals with is the following. Sha'alti is simchas, I asked simchas, I wrote sashim kor b'nechse achiv. So let's say what he wants to do is he wants to sell some of the assets that he inherited from his brother. So what does he do? So keitzad hu oseh. So im kohen hu yaseh se'udah v'yafayis. So if he's a kohen, now what does that mean if he's a kohen? Because we all know that what's not an option for the kohen is to go ahead and divorce her. Because, well, he could do yibum, but he can't divorce her. Because if he divorces her, if he does yibum and divorces her, that's it. That will permanently terminate the marriage. She's now a grusha. Okay, so what he'll do is yaseh se'udah v'yafayis. So what he'll do is he'll make a nice meal for his wife. He'll take her out. And im Yisrael hu megarish beget. Now, if he's a Yisrael, what he'll do is he'll divorce her. And then yachzir. And then what he'll do is he'll remarry her. So what do you gain by doing that? So the gain over there is that when you're remarrying her, so now all the assets of his brother are no longer locked against that ksuva. So basically what it does is it frees him up to in order to write a new ksuva for his wife. And what it does is it makes other properties, the properties that he inherited from his brother available to him. Okay. So, and so the Gemara asks now, we're in the top of the Amud Beis, so I don't understand. If ksuva can already be collected in her lifetime, so let's consider the following. Meaning, why don't we just simply say that instead of going through the procedure of having to divorce her and remarry her, why not just simply go ahead and designate particular parts of the estate in order to secure the ksuva? And we won't have to go through the whole process of getting a divorce and remarrying her. So why don't we do that? So ulatamech velusve mimas nisan. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you. Can we go back to our Mishnah? Let's take a walk back to our Mishnah. So lo yomer la, remember our Mishnah now said, here's what the Yavam should not be saying to his Yavama. Harei ksuvasech menachas lech al shulchan. From your late husband. So let's set aside particular pieces of land to use to secure against the ksuva. In other words, don't do that. So the Gemara says, yeah, but as far as the Mishnah is concerned, that is just simply advisement, meaning he's under advisement not to do that. So the So the ilo temahachi sefer diktani v'chein lo yomer adam liishto harik suvasech menachas le'al shochan elakon nechasav achrein l'ksuvas ishto. And the Gemara says, and I'm telling you, by the way, that it's an advisement statement of the Mishnah. It's not a halacha psuka, because look at the next part of the Mishnah. Next part of the Mishnah says is that when a man's married to a woman, meaning not yavam, just standard marriage between husband and wife. So what the husband shouldn't do is say, look, right, I know all my properties are mortgaged against the ksuva. Well, let's do the following. Let's just consolidate one of my properties against the ksuva. Don't do that. So e baile lizvun achanami delamatzi mizmein. Consider a man who's married. Is he allowed to sell any of his properties? The answer, of course, is unequivocally yes. Meaning, these properties are not locked against the ksuva. In other words, she does not have the ability. She does have a lien on his properties, but she does not have the ability to block and decline any sale that he makes of any of his properties. He's of course entitled to sell his properties. So when the Mishnah says, and oh, by the way, what he shouldn't do is he shouldn't consolidate and take one of his properties and use it to secure the ksuva, all the Mishnah meant is, I'm just giving you good advice. Don't do that. Because when you do that, you're going to make her feel uncomfortable. You're going to make her feel like, hey, I'm getting ready for divorce. Okay, so let's set aside that property for you. In other words, but what the Mishnah certainly doesn't mean is that all of his properties now, because they have a lien on them, so therefore he can't sell them. So Ella, it's a tova kamashmalan. Hachanami, it's a tova kamashmalan. So Ella, the Rabbi Abakasha. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. So from the Mishnah, we can't walk away with anything from our Mishnah. Meaning, our Mishnah is basically Eitz Tova. Our Mishnah is just simply giving good advice, but not telling you what you can and cannot do. Ah, so with that stated, so the Gemara now wants to know, good. But what about Rabbi Abba? So the Rabbi is from the Brace of Rabbi Abba. So from the Brace of Rabbi Abba, it would sound like the Yavam cannot designate one of the properties for his Yavama. So the Gemara says, the Rabbi Abba namalokasha. So the Gemara says, no, even from Rabbi Abba, it's not difficult. Mishum Eva. So the issue over there is the animosity that it creates. In other words, if what he does is he takes one of the properties that he inherited from his brothers and uses that to secure the ksuva that he owes her, so that immediately is going to create Eva. It's going to create animus between him and his Yavama. And it's just simply not a good practice in terms of starting the marriage, right? Let's start the marriage. And look, I just, you know, what a windfall I got from your late husband. And oh, by the way, let's do the following. I'm sure you're going to be fine with it. And let's take one of the properties and use that to secure, giving me free clearance to go ahead and to sell all the other properties. What the Gemara is saying is that the reason why you shouldn't do that is just simply because it results in Eva, but not because not because all the properties are going to be locked and secured against the ksuva. Okay, Adkan. We're going to stop over here. Gavra. We're going to start tomorrow with the episode of whatever. It's a maisa that actually occurred, and we'll start with that tomorrow. It takes us well into tomorrow's daf. Okay. Meanwhile, wait just 1 second. So let's quickly recap our daf today. Okay, really challenging daf, but just in terms of a summary. Okay, the most of the daf today revolved around the Shomeres Yavam, being that she's in a limbo, in between husbands, and now on one hand she is not a married woman, on the other hand she is a married woman. Okay, it's confusing, and exactly for that reason of confusion. So what happens in the event that she dies? Well, first of all, before that, in other words, the Mishnah demonstrates whether or not she's allowed to sell properties that she acquired while she's a Shomeres Yavam. Check. She's allowed to do. Rachmanis, what if she dies while being a Shomeres Yavam? Who inherits her? Nichsei Tzom Barzino, Nichsei Malug, and Ruksuva? Answer, Machlokas. Right? And even within the Machlokas in terms of what exactly is the Shita of Beis Hillel, as the Mishnah articulates the Shita of Beis Hillel, not totally clear what a Shita is. Admittedly, that's difficult. It's just difficult, but it is, it's a machlokas. Anyway, and then what happens when she gets married? So once she gets married, so now her yavam is her husband for all intents and purposes, with notable exception that the ksuva is going to not be written by her, by the yavam, when he marries her. But basically what he's going to do is he's recycling his brother's ksuva. Not even recycling it, meaning that's not even a good way to describe it. Meaning, he's just going to be settling into the ksuva that was already written for her from his late brother, her late husband. Good. And then finally, what happens if he divorces her and remarries her? So again, we're going to be reusing the original ksuva under those circumstances. Good. What did we discuss today in today's daf? Really, one topic. One major topic, and that is that while being a Shomeres Yavam and she dies, who has the financial obligation to bury her? So actually, the answer came at the very beginning of the discussion, right? The Yavam has the obligation to bury her. But then what the Gemara did for most of today's daf is that it litigated that very issue, meaning the Yavam has the obligation to bury her. And meanwhile, he's not the husband. He does stand to inherit the brother, but he's not the husband. So how is it that he has the obligation, the financial obligation to bury her? Okay, good. And that's what we spent most of our day discussing, going over the shitas of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, the back and forth between Abaye and Rava, right? Abaye says basically we're coming at him with from two sides. Either you'll bury her, or if you're declining burial, so then you'll pay her the ksuva. You're right, you'll pay her estate the ksuva. Okay, and is that a legitimate argument? The back and forth on that complicated issue. Included in that issue is also the question of whether or not her ksuva is considered like a collectible, even though it's an account receivable, is an account receivable that's viewed as if it's already collected. And this also takes us to another major debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in terms of account receivables in general. Who is the muchzak, who's considered the holder of an account receivable? Okay, good. The conventional position is that when you're holding an account receivable, you're holding just that. In other words, it's a receivable. You're not the muchzak on the money yet. But because you have a note, so therefore you're entitled to collect, but you're not, it's not as if you're collected yet. Beis Shammai takes us to a really interesting position that Hakola Omei Legavos Kegavo Idami, anyone who stands to receive is as if he's already collected. That's a really interesting position. Beis Shammai takes that position. Okay. And that also played a part in today's discussion as well. And finally, okay, good. Yeah, okay, good. Let's leave it there. Okay, Adkan. As far as